You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
And I'm stuck. He's making cut with his Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome in, everybody. It is another edition of Mode Push, an American view of F1. Thanks for being with us on the program. Alex Keery, Dan Jimenez in the house as usual. Thanks for being with us on the show. You can always download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. We do this show pretty much every race week. We'll give you a breakdown and a preview of everything that is to come in the world of F1. I'm one of the newer fans to F1, and Dan is like an old school. Been watching racing forever, has a racing background of engineering, and on top of it, just like you and I, avoids his day job just for a few moments every week to be able to jump into the F1 habit that we've created for ourselves. Dan, what's going on, man?
It really is a habit. It's been a great week. Last weekend was phenomenal. I think it was like reminded us why we're all so crazy about the sport. It was an awesome race.
So, I mean, there was a little part of me that went, oh, that's a little bit of a bummer to not see Max like continue that run, but I might be in the minority here because I like the idea of just going through and having an undefeated season, you know, be the Miami Dolphins of F1, which would be, I mean, it's insane to think that they were even on that path, right? But it happened. It finally happened, and it happened to be in Singapore, a race that the Ferrari team won last year, although with Charles Leclerc last time around.
Last year Sergio won.
Oh, that's right. No,
I believe
that's
Singapore.
Right. He did.
Yeah. Ferrari last won in Austria last year.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. See, in my head, with all the rain and everything last year, maybe they got maybe in my head that there was a little bit
closer. Oh, yeah. Charles was on the pole. Charles was on pole last year.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's what it was. So Ferrari, have they figured some things out? I mean, I would think that the Tifosi are probably walking around, chest puffed out. I mean, they normally are, even when they're not winning. But I just think that this is one of those moments where Ferrari can look around and be pretty excited. To break that streak is impressive in itself.
Yeah, they're on a roll. They've got momentum building, and we're really going to know when it comes to Japan. You know, Carlos was saying that after the race, too, that, I mean, they were fantastic this weekend. They were great in Monza, but Japan is just bread and butter. And we'll talk more about Japan later in the episode, but it's bread and butter for Red Bull. And so we're really going to see where the teams are stacking up relative to Red Bull after a pretty bad weekend for them, you know. But I like the point that you made around Red Bull not being able to win every race this season, like we had potentially expected, is I think just goes to show how hard of an achievement that really is. So if it ever does happen, we need to think back to this year when we all thought that it was going to be a given, and then we, you know, go to Singapore, which is a significantly different track, and Red Bull just was kind of ruled nowhere on the timesheet. So a record that's still yet to be broken, and if it does, we all need to, you know, definitely respect it because it's hard to do.
Speaking of hard to do, finishing the race seemed hard to do for George Russell. Poor kid. Ooh. I would like to say poor kid, but he put himself in the wall. I know he was. I mean, that was an insane fight. First of all, to have Carlos right there in first, and to just be managing those tires, going, I got nothing here. Like, I have got to figure this thing out. He had a brilliant race strategy wise, but it was going to go 2-3-4 in some fashion to three British drivers with Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton and George Russell. And poor Russell was on that podium and he put it in the wall. And I guess that's just the nature of racing. But I mean, to have it happen, I mean, was there one lap left? Was it on the last lap? I just remember.
The last lap. It was the last sector of the last lap.
Oh, and just that radio call. No! Like this idea that you're to just be, and then to hear the Ferrari call, Russell is in the wall. You know, you're going, Russell's in the wall, two more turns, you will win. Like the
yeah.
It was a pretty exciting thing though, but I mean honestly, we have not had that type of a fight for first place for P1 in a race in I don't know how long.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time. I mean, other than Max and Lewis at Abu Dhabi in 2021, that's the last time I can think of a last lap, the potential for a last lap pass for the win. And we had four cars, like you said, within like a second and a half of each other, right. 2 seconds of each other. It was awesome. I mean, it was the kind of finish that I got spoiled as a NASCAR fan as being kind of common. A last lap pass is more common in oval track racing, but there's something about it when it's after, you know, 62 laps on a street circuit that made it extra special. It was a kind of stand up off your couch and be like 5 feet from the TV moment because you just don't know what's about to happen. And George, it breaks her heart, you know, like that really sucks. He could only blame himself for it.
Right.
It's wild that Lando also nicked the wall right in front of him. Like those guys were going all out.
It's awesome.
And he just had a momentary lapse of judgment, like centimeters, doing 100 plus miles per hour into that corner. He's off by centimeters and it, you know, just totally ruins his weekend. He goes from, you know, hero to zero in a single corner. It was like the, you know, the just pain of defeat and, you know, the agony of defeat and the thrill of victory all in, you know, one lap. It was an emotional roller coaster.
So what did Carlos do that was so brilliant strategy wise that got him that W that everybody was so excited about? Because, you know, they're kind of lauding him as being the guy like this is the race path that he has kind of chosen for himself. He took some risks that others did not, or others took risks in other areas. What really ended up being the race win for this guy?
Yeah, so it came in two phases. In the first phase of the race, before that safety car from Liam Lawson, or not Liam, it was Logan Sargeant that brought out the safety car, like lap 24 or something. So in that phase of the race, Carlos was managing the pack, like he was backing up, and like George was coming up, I think he had gotten around Charles and was back in second, and he was trying to pass. And he would, even George was saying like, you know, Carlos is really going slow. The reason he was doing that is he wanted to keep the pack like first through fifth really tight with everyone else behind
battling one another. Right.
Yeah. He wants them to battle one another and he wants them to not undercut him. So if they had stretched it out, George would have a space to be able to come in, pit, and come out and clear air and put down fast lap times and undercut Carlos. So you didn't want that to happen. So he backs it up so that if George pits, he comes back out in traffic. You know, he's in 12th instead of like 7th,
sure.
And, you know, open. So that was phase number one. Phase number two is, okay, we have the virtual safety car. The Mercedes come in, they pit, they have fresh tires. And it's, you know, they catch up, they get around Charles, and now they get to Lando, five laps to go. You would have thought they just would have breezed past Lando. So he backs up to Lando to get Lando within a second so that Lando can use his DRS against to defend against George. And, you know, that puts Carlos at a risk because now Lando's 0.8 behind him instead of maybe 1.5. So that gives Lando a chance to battle for first. So he's just playing a very tight gap of don't let Lando get close enough to pass you, but don't let him get out of your DRS zone so that he can defend against George for two or three extra laps, which ended up making the difference. So yeah, like A+ to Carlos for his racecraft. It was really cool to see that, you know, him playing that out. And Ferrari gives him all the credit in the post race that they were saying that was all on him kind of coming up with that strategy and implementing it. It was cool to see.
So what was the problem with Red Bull then? Why was it? Was it just because Singapore is so darn hard to pass around that circuit? Is it because, you know, the propensity for there's always going to be safety cars, it seems like there's always going to be virtual safety cars. What is it that kept Red Bull out of this thing basically from the beginning? Because as soon as qualifying happened, Max said, yeah, this isn't happening this weekend. Like, we're not it. And I thought it was so funny that he was so dismissive. It wasn't even like, we'll see race time, I'm going to start passing everybody. And that wasn't the case. So why was it that Red Bull couldn't figure their stuff out this weekend in Singapore?
Yeah. So the thing about Singapore, it's a city circuit, obviously. So it's really rough. It's really uneven. It's not a professional circuit that's like graded down to the millimeter of exactness. And so the cars have to ride higher. They have to have a higher ride height. Like driving a Formula One car is more like driving a go-kart than it is your normal street car. Our street cars can take up the bumps and, you know, you don't feel it. If you're in a go-kart driving down Main Street, you know, you're going to get your teeth knocked out. So they're driving in Singapore, and so they have to raise the ride height. And the Red Bull is designed to ride really low. And what they do better than anybody else is on those big, smooth, large professional circuits is they can slam that thing to the ground and be able to get all the driving dynamics that they need out of it, where everyone else is used to riding higher than Red Bull. So you get to Singapore where everyone has to ride high. Red Bull has to lift their ride height up. And now they're just playing in a setup that they're not used to, that everybody else is like, this is what we've been doing all year. So the other cars are more well designed to ride at that height. And it just created, I think, what we would call like more of a level playing field, where at the other tracks like Japan, we're going to go to, it's like everyone still has to stay high because they haven't quite figured out what Red Bull has with suspension and aero, and Red Bull gets to slam their car to the ground. So I think that was the difference, is it was just such a different animal. And you know, when we get to Japan, we'll see if, okay, now when they go back to their bread and butter, are they going to be back at the front dominating, or have the other teams really caught up, and have maybe even these technical directives played an impact in how competitive Red Bull is.
All right, so let's now go to, and just for kind of the overview, by the way, the weekend ended up with your podium of Sainz, Norris, Hamilton. Boom. There you go. Something different. So we just have to kind of do a victory lap there, I guess, for the sport of F1. And those guys were all within, you know, 1.5 seconds of one another at the top. So you have Sainz, mm-hmm. less than a second for Lando Norris, and then 1.2 for Lewis Hamilton behind the leader. So that was really, really close to the top there. Leclerc, Verstappen. I read something about how, oh, Verstappen had a really, really great race. You just didn't notice it because, you know, he's back in fifth or whatever. And I thought, I'm not gonna hear any of that because, you know, Max Verstappen doesn't go, that's actually a really good race for me. That was fifth place, was really good. I'm sure he had fun driving, but whatever. Gasly in sixth. Piastri, who just signed a new deal, inked a new deal through 2026, that guy's been racing the heck, you know, driving the wheels off of that thing. And his teammate is, you know, not markedly better, I would say. But, I mean, he did beat him by about 40 seconds. They were on a little bit of a different strategy. But seventh place for Piastri. He gets a new deal. Was that deserved?
Yes. The new deal, absolutely. He's performed at like a level that no rookie has in a very long time. So, yeah, McLaren is really lucked into he was going to Alpine, you know, a year ago. But so they've lucked into an amazing driver, and I'm sure Alpine is really not happy with having missed out on that, because he's a legit talent.
So then you rounded out the rest of your points winners. Piastri in seventh, like I said, Perez in eighth with 4 points. Liam Lawson, first scoring of points in his career. That's an awesome job to be able to do that with an AlphaTauri that's a little bit of a dog. And does that, I mean, I know that Danny Ric is going to be back with the wrist injury. I'm not saying he's going to be an AlphaTauri guy, but does a seat open up and people like what Liam Lawson is? Or is this just as a nice little brief stint that he's going to have and maybe never be back in an F1 seat again?
I think that they are going to not make the same mistake they did with Nyck de Vries and like rush him into the sport. I think it's great that he's scoring points and he shows that he belongs in F1, or at least a chance at it. But I imagine that they have him run either the Super Formula in Japan that he's running right now, or F2 for another season, and that they next year they go AlphaTauri as Yuki for a year and Daniel Ricciardo for a year, and they see what happens. I think that the pressure is on Yuki to perform more than anybody. And there's rumors coming out even today that they might be announcing a 1-year extension for Yuki's contract here, you know, in Japan and at his home race. So it's probably another year for those two. Liam, great. Thanks for filling in. And, you know, we'll reevaluate for 2025.
That's always
which is
tough.
Probably a good thing for him. You know, I mean, I'm sure he wants to get into it, but, you know, he doesn't want a Nyck de Vries thing where it's too soon and six months later.
Right. More development. Try to figure it out. How about your guy K-Mag scoring his first points since all the way back at the Miami Grand Prix back in May? And Haas gets some points. That's kind of nice. I mean, I think that's only, I don't think he scored many points this year. I think that might be his, I think that might be his third or fourth point of the year. So it's not like he's had a great year. Obviously, he's got 6 points on the season. So you've got K-Mag, who's got points rounded out in 10th. Overall, I think it was an awesome race. I mean, nobody could argue with the fact that, when we're watching battles for 7th and 8th, Dan, at the end of a race on TV, I'm not that excited about it. When we got to actually watch the front of the pack, which is also, I think, a problem in F1. I mean, that's something that if you tune into races – I have a hard time explaining to my kid that, like, oh, no, this scrap right now for between 11th and 13th is actually pretty intense. Like, that's just something we have a hard time comprehending, right, in racing. It's certainly not that way in NASCAR. I guess maybe it is a little bit, but it's one of those things that I have a hard time explaining to people who get into the sport for the first time.
Yeah, it's a bit of like this era of, DRS and all these other ground effect cars. We're like trying to fabricate a bit more excitement because of the way that the cars have just been developed. I am optimistic for a future where the race we saw on Sunday is a race we see every other week, every four races. I think we're going to get a lot more competitive with new regulation changes that they're talking about. Now, those aren't until 2026, but I think that we're on a good path. And sooner than that, I think the other teams are going to catch up very quickly with Red Bull. I think that they're, a regulation change happened last year. Red Bull was on top of the optimum setup and strategy from the get-go, but everyone's going to catch up and it's going to reach a point where teams are much more equal. And I think we're starting to see that. So, I'm excited for what the next few races into the end of the season will show us and set up for hopefully a much more competitive year next year. But it was a super exciting race top to bottom. I feel bad for guys like, Albon. He got absolutely punted by door slammed by Perez. And there hasn't been enough said about that. Like Perez, I think hit three dudes over the weekend, didn't get a penalty. Like, there's some double standard going on right there. But I think that was the weekend that Perez didn't want anybody to remember because he just was kind of all over the place.
So maybe the best tweet of the week was Oscar Piastri signing the deal and tweeting out stress-free contract announcement as always. And to have Alpine actually respond back on Twitter with the with Homer Simpson getting backed into the hedges.
So backing up into the
hedge. I think everybody kind of wins that one. Kudos to Piastri for the funny one, and then Alpine for having that. I wanted to ask you something about, before we get to Japan, Fernando Alonso said something. He goes, look, I'll say it, qualifying is broken. We need to figure something else out in our sport. It's been the same exact format forever. These cars are different now. We need to change the way that qualifying happens. Is that just him saying, I didn't have a great qualifying, I'm kind of pissed about it? Is there a version of qualifying that is like an alternative out there? Because I don't want to just change it for the sake of changing it if whatever the alternative is not as exciting. Where are we on the idea of changing qualifying? Is it ever going to change right now in this particular format? Or is that just Alonso complaining?
Yeah. I think he's 100% right here. I'm with him on this, and he's kind of been on this train for a while now. I mean, the qualifying formats have changed, they haven't changed for a while, but we've had different formats over the decade. So it's definitely an option on the table. And I think the point that he tries to make is the way that these cars are built with hybrids and having to recharge the batteries and get the tires into the optimum temperature zone, you really get one shot per qualifying session at your best time. So if we're just one shot, one lap, then let's just go to one lap qualifying instead of doing all the knockout nonsense where people are backing up and trying to say okay, I want the most optimum. I want to make my lap at the most optimum time for speed on the track, which is latest in the session as possible. And then you just get these, what we saw in Singapore, just people all over each other start trying to finish their last lap and then people getting penalized for impeding. It's ridiculous. I'm with Alonso on that. My vote would be, and I think the same thing that he's advocating for, is single lap qualifying. Just on Friday, we randomize the order and we say, okay, everyone's going to go out in this particular order first through 20th, and you get one shot at it, and all eyes are on the track when so-and-so's going around, and you get, you know, I think that that then puts a lot on the driver's plate, because you just have to minimize your errors. And rather than like, oh, if I didn't get it that lap, I'm going to get another chance at it. This is the format that they had in NASCAR for a super long time. I always thought it was very exciting, because it's just all the attention is on one driver at a time, and it can be really make or break. And you could see, you know, Max messes up in one corner, like that's it. You know, he's starting 12th, and you know that's part of the game, is that you have to be, you know, precise and perfect. So. That would be my vote. And my guess is that we test it out in a sprint format, sprint weekend, that sprint qualifying instead of knockout goes to a single, lap qualifying. And we see how that goes, but I'm with Alonso on this one.
I'm going to, before we get into Japan, I'm going to make you, not a quiz really. It's going to be your thoughts on this one. Okay. Mm-hmm. You have the choice of one racing decked out streetcar produced by Japan all time. Is it easy enough as you just say the Nissan GTR? Is it the Honda NSX? Is it maybe one of those sweet Nissan Zs? Maybe the old Datsun Z, remember before they became Nissan?
Yeah, yeah.
The old Datsun Z. The Skyline, the Supra. I mean, these are ones when I was a kid, I had a neighbor who had a Supra, and I was like, this is like a, what is that, like a Celica on steroids? And somebody's like, no, you don't understand. This is the standard, man. That Skyline, people import those, the right-hand drive of the Nissan Skyline. I'll see that going down the road sometimes, that old 80s, early 90s kind of look to that. The Honda NSX, obviously, the Toyota 2000 GT. Which one is it that you'd pick in your garage? You only get one Japanese street racing car to put in your garage.
Yep. Okay. I was going to hope I could get two,
nip.
But okay. One, if I'm going for only one, and it's like, we might need a whole nother 30 minutes mm-hmm. to talk about this topic, mm-hmm. but I would say an RWB Porsche. An RWB is
what the heck? That's cheating. You can't pick a Porsche.
Oh, okay. But okay. So I know it's not a Porsche. Okay. Then this isn't the one if it doesn't count, but the RWB is like a specialty body kit that they do out of a shop in Japan
okay.
for Porsches, where they like get super wide, fender flares.
Yeah.
And the whole thing. So in my mind, because the guy who runs that shop is Japanese, like that's why my mind went to a Japanese make. So
it's
that one
basically,
doesn't count.
If people were to picture an RWB Porsche, it's the poster that your oldest brother had on the wall for like the old school 911, like Carrera, right? With those wide hips, and they make the flares to fit those wide back tires. They got the big wing on the back, but you're right. Does not count because it's a Porsche.
Doesn't count. Okay. So I'm going to go with maybe a non-traditional answer, but I'm going to say the Lexus LFA.
Okay.
And why I say that is it is the best sounding car I've ever heard in real life. And the only time I've heard it was driving home from work from the race shop in North Carolina. And Kyle Busch from NASCAR, famous driver, passes me. And he's in his Lexus LFA that he got because he's a Toyota driver.
Yeah, right.
It was yellow. Mm-hmm. It was yellow, just like his number 18 M&M's car was yellow. The sound that engine made just gave me a feeling that no other car has ever given me on the road. Just, it was incredible. So
okay.
If you haven't listened to it, if we listen to it now, great. Go watch your YouTube videos. The LFA, I don't even know if it drives great. I think it looks good and it sounds amazing.
Okay.
And for me, sound and looks is everything.
I found... This guy, this is one of those videos where they do the full kind of wraparound of this car. Here we go. Got the big tri-exhaust on the back. This is a V10, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's got that little purr at the end, too. Yeah, people love this. Oh, there you go. All right. I see what you're doing there. You know what that is... That's kind of like an old school like V12 Ferrari right there, dude. Like something special on that thing, dude, man.
It sounded like an F1 car when it passed me on the road.
Right, the like, F1 videos of those V10s that they had back in the day, the ones that just with those high RPMs. People still drool over it and say that this V6 hybrid's no good, and that's mm-hmm. the sound they're looking for is that one right there. All right, I'm going to have to go with the 1993 Nissan Maxima that I drove in high school.
old reliable Maxima.
Oh, I'm telling you. No, I would I used to obsess over like the Lexus, you know, they had that whole, you know, the LFA is pretty dope, but I think that the GTR, to have that like handmade signature on that engine that somebody makes for you there, I think that would be so I think that'd be so cool. And I think that's one of the fastest production cars that's still you know, that's still out there. So it's got a great look to it. And it's somehow they were able to go, hey, here's the Skyline Heritage that we have, and we're going to make it look even more cool. And I think that'd be my pick is that GTR.
Yeah, the GTR. I've only been able to drive a GTR once. It was my neighbor's, and it was like tuned to the nines. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
It was like boosted to some ridiculous PSI. And I mean, I've owned AMGs, and they're amazing. They're so much fun. They're crazy fast. But the GTR scared me.
Yeah.
It was legitimately put the fear of God in me when I put my foot onto the floor. It's crazy. I think that's a good pick.
My neighbors raced in the SCCA series growing up. My next door neighbors, it was a husband wife racing team. They both had Mazda RX-7s, right? From like, you know, that early 90s kind of body style. And when they would fire those things up on Saturday mornings, kind of getting warmed up, because all they're doing is trailering that stuff to the racetrack on their own. And by the way, she won most of the races. Like he got there, and I swear he tuned her car better so that, like, because he liked the idea of her winning, beating all these guys on the weekend, including himself. So the RX-7 has a different sound to it. That rotary engine, I'll always remember that sound as well, growing up next to a couple of RX-7 racers. All right. Get us to Japan, though, now that we've determined what car we would likely try to own at some point if we could own Japanese racing cars. Tell us what's going on in Suzuka. What should we expect? You said this is Red Bull's bread and butter. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's high-speed cornering. So big, long, sweeping. The first section is a bunch of kind of tight S's that start to open up, and then the rest of it is just big, wide, sweeping, high-speed down. Corners. So Red Bull's really good at compromising or making the compromise between drag and downforce. And so I think everyone in the paddock is expecting them to be back to full form this next week, but no one really knows for sure, right? Is Ferrari, McLaren, this is probably going to be a good McLaren track. Mercedes is obviously showing some strength. And then it rains a lot in Suzuka. So I'm sure if we pulled up the weather report, it would say high chance of rain. So that throws in the uncertainty there. And then the technical directive that came out for Singapore, which got rid of a lot of the flexi wing, flexi aero stuff, you know, Red Bull saying like, oh, that didn't affect us. But I mean, we'll find out, right? So I think we're going to know a lot after first and second practice this weekend. And it's a fun race. The Japanese fans are commonly, you know, described as the most passionate fans in F1. So it's always a fun watch. Last year was the race that Max sealed up the championship, but didn't know it until like 5 minutes after the race was over, because everyone is confused about the points and how it was supposed to work.
That was that fumble between FIA versus F1, and everybody pointed the fingers at each other, even to the off season where I think we talked about, Ben Suleiman, who was like, this was your problem. Like
he threw the shade at the champagne dinner. Yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to question whether or not Max is going to win the championship this year. So that might be a moot point.
Right. Yep.
As we look forward to this race, then give me what this looks like. Then is this just an easy Red Bull 1-2, or how does it work? Then do we have some semblance of carrying over from the weekend of some success from Ferrari, or who does well at a track like this other than Red Bull?
Yeah, I think Ferrari and McLaren are the two that I would watch. I think Oscar, this is the type of track that I think Oscar as a rookie could learn quickly and excel at versus like the more technical Singapore. So I'm looking to them. Man, Aston Martin has really got to get their act together. This was not a great last weekend. Obviously, Lance is just doing everything he can to lose his seat. And Alonso did not have a great race, but I you would think that this would be a good track for them as well. So hopefully they can return to form a bit. But man, I think Carlos is just in a mental state right now that is primed and ready to take a fight to Max. So I think that they're going to be super competitive.
Okay. Give us your podium then. Give me your thoughts on how this thing ends. 1, 2, 3. Since you called Sainz, Norris, and Hamilton for last week, let's see if you can keep the dream going.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm going to say Max wins. If I'm putting money down on it, Max wins. We get Carlos second and Lando third.
Okay. I like it. It's another week of our podcast in the books. If you have not downloaded the podcast yet or subscribed to it, we encourage you to do so. If you jump on, you can listen to these every week and then tell somebody who's ever getting in whoever's getting in of your friends to F1, tell them, hey, I got a podcast for you. These guys have a little bit more of an American tilt to it because we kind of see everything through that lens. So so do that. Go to wherever your Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, anything, any of those things, you can find the podcast there. Or download the KSL Sports app, and you can find the podcast there every week as well. For Dan Jimenez, I'm Alex Curie. We'll see you next time, everybody.